Welcome to 20 Minutes and Two Beers In. I'm JD.
Hey, everybody. This is Bobby.
Season 4, episode 158 overall, and we're going to talk a little Super Bowl.
Yeah, we got to get ready for the matchup between the Seahawks and the Broncos.
You are like in your height of glory. But here's the thing, folks. I mean, you guys know Bobby as being boisterous and just a jerk when it comes to his teams.
Oh, come on.
You haven't been. You haven't gloated once.
Like, I don't do that.
I expect
I'm very superstitious about this. Going into big games, I don't talk any smack until the game is over.
I expected you coming into Studio 714.
I'm not even wearing Broncos gear today. I'm not wearing Broncos gear today.
I expect you doing victory laps. I expected you just to be, you know, in your face.
Here's the thing.
I expected you to Richard Jefferson me.
Richard Jefferson?
Richard Sherman. Well, Richard Jefferson's a big jerk as well.
I was going to say, what?
No, I thought you were going to Shermanate me.
No, no. Why would I? I'm very excited about the accomplishment. But when you've been to the Super Bowl 7 times, JD, 7 times,
mm-hmm.
You got to act like you've been there before. So that's what I'm doing. I'm acting like I've been there before.
Wow.
Not going to say anything until the game is over, the final score is done. Because it is anybody's game.
Yep.
When it's the number one offense versus the number one defense, it really is anybody's game. Yep. I'm really excited for this matchup. I think it's a fantastic matchup. The NFL couldn't have done better for what the game is going to be. I think it's going to be close. I think both teams have a shot at this. It's going to come down to execution.
I still think it sucks, the venue.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I hope that doesn't have a factor in it. Because if it's bad weather, then that throws it entirely a different way.
I don't like that. I've talked on this show many times how I feel like it should be in Hawaii every year.
Yeah, weather shouldn't have to play a factor.
B, when the Vikings make it to the Super Bowl, I will be the biggest jerk on the face of the planet. I will be parading around. I will be painting my body purple to go to work.
Have you ever thought that maybe that's why the Vikings haven't made it to the Super Bowl? The way you carry yourself?
You know what?
On a victory Monday?
I handled the Twins, you know, two World Series titles with grace.
That was a long time ago.
I handled it with grace?
22 years ago, my friend.
What are you doing to me? What are you doing
to me
right
saying.
Now?
I'm just saying. Anyways, we have a great show today.
We've got a great guest.
Kenneth Arthur from Field Goals, which is an SB Nation blog. It's the Seahawks blog. They have a lot of really good stuff on their website. A lot of great stuff, not only for Seahawks fans. If you're a football fan and you want to know more about what to expect from the matchup, it's a really good resource for you.
It really is. And it's Field Goals, fieldgulls.com. And great insight. He's written for them for a number of years now and has a unique take because he's been through some bad times as a Seahawks fan.
Sure.
You got to check out his writing. It's absolutely fantastic. Speaking of fantastic, Bobby, before we get to our beer.
We have a great beer that we've been drinking today.
It's time for the beer devotional.
Okay.
This is from the Medocino Brewing Company, Red Tail
Air. I think
you
pronounced that terribly, by the way.
I probably did. But the quote is from Thomas Campbell, "Yes, my soul sentimentally craves British beer." I've had British beer. I'm not going to go there.
No?
No. It's good. It's good. But the beer fact is what I thought was interesting on this one.
Okay.
In 1840, Americans drank 2.5 gallons of spirits per capita, but only about a gallon of beer. But in 1896, they downed 15 gallons of beer per person. Pre-prohibition beer consumption reached its high point in 1914 at 21 gallons of beer a person drank. When the ban of drinking ended, it took the brewery industry a long time to recover, and it wasn't until 1975 that Americans would drink as much beer as they did in 1914. My question for you, Bobby, 21 gallons of beer in 1914. Are you living the 1914 lifestyle?
I don't know. I was wondering about our podcast. How are we doing gallons of beer-wise in our podcast, JD?
That's a great question.
Yeah.
158 episodes.
We've drunk our share. We've got a great beer that we were drinking during the interview today. It's Five Rabbits Brewery, which is brewed here in Chicago. It's the Midwinter Ale, and I'm not even going to try to pronounce this. I'm going to try to pronounce it. I'm going to pronounce it wrong.
I'm sure you will.
Huitzy?
Bless you.
That's what I'm going to say is the name of the beer. It's an 8.7% alcohol by volume, so that's why JD is slurring his speech right now. It's a Belgian-style golden ale brewed with hibiscus, flowers, ginger, chamomile, and honey. It's a delicious beer, JD. I really enjoyed this beer.
As we're drinking it, the first few sips...
I said...
What did you say?
I said, you can taste the hibiscus and I like it. And I can. I could and I did.
No, but folks, it was like this.
I didn't raise a pinky in the air, all right?
You can really taste the hibiscus in this. It's crisp.
I was kind of going like... What was the SNL skit?
Where they were like the radio...
Good times. It's a delicious beer.
It is good.
Great job, Five Rabbits Cerveceria.
Very good. Very good. Bobby, you know what? We should start out with some music.
We should. Before we do, for our new listeners, how you follow us on Twitter is @2beersin. That's @2beersin. You can also email the podcast 20minutes2beersin@gmail.com. And first, before we get into our interview, JD, you got some music for us. What do you got?
I do. It is the group Devour the Day. They actually re-released an album they released earlier in 2013, but with a couple extra tracks. But the song is great. It's called Good Man. I want to be a good man. I want to do right. I don't want to be a criminal. Is there any good left in me? I wanna be a good man. Is there any good left in me? I wanna be a good man. I wanna be safe. I wanna be a free man, but I feel like a slave.
We'd like to welcome in Kenneth Arthur. He's a contributor to the Field Goals SB Nation blog. You can follow him also on Twitter at Kenneth Arthur S. Welcome, Kenneth. And first things first, did this win over the 49ers go into the Super Bowl? Did the win mean more because it was against the 49ers?
Yeah, definitely. There's no question that there's nobody else. There's nobody else in the league that we'd rather beat to go to the Super Bowl. I mean, obviously, some people said it was bigger than winning the Super Bowl, which is just ridiculous. Maybe you hear that from Seattle fans, which is that never know what that Super Bowl experience is like. But I'm assuming that winning it is going to be even way better than beating the Niners. But yeah, like, I had no feelings for the Niners until both of us were good. And then they were good before us, so they just talk a lot of smack, and it's not really that welcome, because I know our team is good, and everybody is sort of dismissive of us, but I don't know, I'm sure a lot of fans feel that way in a lot of cities.
Are you, as a writer for the, covering the Seahawks, are you annoyed with how much publicity Richard Sherman got? That kind of overshadowed how just great this team has been?
No, not at all. Quite the opposite. I'd say that, Richard Sherman, I was just sort of thinking about it today while I was just walking along and thinking about, you know, all the coverage of Richard Sherman. And I don't know if we've... It's been a long time since the city has had a real huge star. I mean, you can argue that know, he's not the most valuable player on the team, but he's definitely a star, and he's starting to get inside of that. It's that Dallas Cowboys 90s sort of media coverage hype, whatever you want to call it, I think, in a sense that, you know, we're good, but you know, when we're represented in that way with Sherman, it's like, oh, they're good, and they're also kind of jerks about it. Can I say, like, dickish? I mean, people think we're dickish about it, and that's sort of that University of Miami, Dallas Cowboys, that kind of thing. To me, it's like, hey, that's something that lives on a lot longer than anything else. I mean, just the fact that, you know, Deion Sanders and Michael Irvin, the way that they presented themselves, it went beyond football, and I think that's cool. And, you know, we haven't really had anything that goes beyond football since, I'd say, like, or beyond sports since, you know, like Ken Griffey Jr. in the 90s, the kind of coverage where everybody, whether you were a fan of the sport or not, just wanted to see more of that person. And it doesn't suck to be in the spotlight.
No, and I think he picked the right time to be right in the spotlight. I mean, all week, these 2 weeks leading up to the Super Bowl, the story is going to be him.
Which could take pressure off the team.
And it's also, I mean, great for him. And what you're saying, this is the guy that's out there that's promoting the Seahawks brand out there to people, and people see that swagger, which is big, man. You're right. That is something that we haven't seen in a long time, especially from a defensive back, not since... Darrell Revis had a little bit of that, but Deion Sanders was the man, and now Richard Sherman is bringing that back to the position. And you said it already, about who's he's not the best on the team, but who do you think is the face of the team? Like, if you were starting a team today, would you want Russell Wilson? Would you take Marshawn Lynch? Would you take Richard Sherman? Who's the first guy out the gate that you would want?
Well, yeah, just to quickly on that, Deion Sanders and the stuff about sort of mentality, and you think about it, you don't feed a lot from a defensive back, as you said, but both of those guys, they're offensive players playing defense. You know, Richard Sherman played wide receiver for 3 years at Stanford, and it's a mentality of we want the ball, give me the ball, but they're not allowed to have the ball because they're on the wrong side of the ball. So that's when you get those guys like Deion Sanders and Richard Sherman that are mouthy, and then wide receivers naturally don't like that either, because they're supposed to be only the ones talking. They're not supposed to be getting it back at them. They're supposed to just talk and do the scoring the touchdowns. But I think it's that mentality. And I like it from our team to say, because if it hasn't worked for 35 plus years without a Super Bowl, then try something different. And if it's sort of this cocky mentality, go for that. I don't care, just as long as you win. But the first player I would definitely take is Russell Wilson. I mean, there's no way that we're in this position without him. As good as the defense is, we had pretty much the same defense 3 years ago with Tavares Jackson, or 2 years ago. We had pretty much not as talented, but Richard Sherman was there, Earl Thomas was there, Cam Chancellor was there, Chris Clemens was there, and Pete Carroll is a defensive guru, so we were going to have the defense going that way anyway. But when we got Russell Wilson, it's such an upgrade to the quarterback position, not just physically, but, you know, the mentality. And this is like, I liken it maybe to, I hate to even say this because I hate the Yankees, but, you know, it's that Derek Jeter mentality. It's like, I'm a winner, and I'm going to go out there, and I'm only going to win. It's the only thing I care about. And it's also just like, it's funny thing is, you think of competitive people, you think of, like, big, mean jocks, but it's that smart, like, kind, you know, nice eyes, competitive guy that's more competitive than the rest of everyone else. But it's like, yeah, you just want to follow that guy. And that's what players said when Russell Wilson was a rookie. From the very moment that he stepped in, it was him or Matt Flynn. Matt Flynn was just there. Russell Wilson commanded everything.
Speaking on the offensive side of the ball, as a Viking fan, I watched Percy Harvin play and not play for our team for a long time, whether it's a wind injury, it's the migraines, it's a number of different things with Percy Harvin. But he's back. Are you guys worried a little bit how he's going to fit into the flow of what really is a smooth running machine right now?
No, I mean, you know, we're 2-0 with him, so... you know, he might not have played very much in those games, but, you know, as you saw against the Vikings, that was the one game that I went to this year. And you know, his presence on special teams is, there's no way that that could cause any sort of disruption in your rhythm when it's special teams, but his contributions on kickoff returns are immense.
You had to bring that game up, didn't you?
Oh, yeah. Well, it was, you know, we've all been there, but especially in Seattle. But, yeah, that's the thing, though, is when you're going to play in a game against Peyton Manning and the Denver Broncos in the Super Bowl, you don't know where one extra point's going to come from that's going to make the difference. But if Percy Harvin is getting you to the 35-yard line on kickoffs instead of the 20-yard line, it's a major advantage for Russell Wilson and the offense. So there's no way that we're not better off with Percy Harvin. And I think that, you know, the wide receivers that are here already have proven that they're capable, because we're 15-3 without Percy Harvin for the most part. But there's no way that and you add him in for a few select plays, I think that we're only better off for it.
Well, and why do you think that the receivers for the Seahawks, they don't get a lot of respect? I mean, all the talk was, once Percy Harvin was ruled out, people were saying, oh, I don't know what they're going to be able to do against the 49ers without Percy Harvin. But you guys have played essentially without him all season. Why are the other receivers not getting the respect?
You know, this is sort of, I think that from the time, that's just Pete Carroll's philosophy, is you work with what you've got. And so last year, what we had was a rookie quarterback, you know, playing for the first time. They brought him along slowly, so that didn't, you know, inflate any of the numbers of the players around him. And when you're developing a quarterback, you know, things are going to develop. So it's one of those things where, you know, Ben Roethlisberger didn't throw it a lot in his first few years. Tom Brady did not throw it very much in his first few years. You know, even Andrew Luck and Russell Wilson have about, you know, the same number of attempts this year. And I don't think that being thrown more, you know, is going to make you just as efficient. So at this time, Russell Wilson, you know, he's still got some more progress to make in terms of trusting him to throw it 500 or 600 times. And so since he only throws it 407 times, which is what he had this past year, there's only so much to go around. But on a yards per target basis, on a yards per attempt basis, on a yards per target basis, the Seattle receivers had higher numbers than the Broncos receivers. Mm-hmm. On a big play basis, on a number of 25-plus yard passes, the Seahawks had more than the Broncos. Mm-hmm. This is not a non-explosive offense. They're just more selective about when they throw the ball. And when they throw the ball, they're going for big numbers. And if Doug Baldwin switched places with Eric Decker, he'd have 1,200 yards. It's just one of those things where people play fantasy football. They don't care if you're an efficient 800 yards. Yeah. They would much rather be being inefficient 1,300 yards.
I have a question for you. You've covered the Seahawks for a number of years now. What surprises you about this team?
I would have to sort of lump this team in with the last couple of years, because I felt that they were going to go to the Super Bowl for about a couple of years now. When at the end of 2011, they were starting to get on a little bit of a roll, but still the offense wasn't going very well. But you could see with Earl Thomas, this is a team that was getting on a roll, and they just needed the right guy at quarterback. And so for a couple of years now, I felt, okay, we're going to win a Super Bowl. As long as nobody, like, really major gets hurt, like Wilson or Thomas, whatever. You know, because even Peyton Manning couldn't win a Super Bowl without Bob Sanders. The one time he had Bob Sanders, he won a Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. During his worst playoff performance, he had 3 touchdowns and 7 interceptions when he won the Super Bowl in those 4 games. Mm-hmm. But when he had a defense, he won a Super Bowl. So we have to have guys like Earl Thomas. And it was that sort of, when Richard Sherman got started in the second half of his rookie season, they started to have this attitude. So it was the first time they'd really seen a team that had, like, an attitude. and a mentality that they were pissed off because all of these guys, a lot of our stars were not highly rated coming out of college. The guys like Baldwin, the guys like Sherman.
Sure.
These are guys that are fifth round picks, undrafted free agents. You know, Russell Wilson fell to the third round because everybody said, well, if you were only 6'1", you'd be a top three pick.
Yeah.
And if you redrafted the draft right now, you'd probably go above Robert Griffin.
Yeah.
I mean, that's how much things have changed. So they're kind of a pissed off team, you know, and the whole city is sort of a pissed off city when it comes to sports. Because the Sonics got taken from us.
Sure.
The Mariners suck, and they have sucked for their entire existence except for about a 5-year period. So we're pissed off, and we're just like, you can't just go out there and expect good things to happen to you. You have to go out there and take it, just like in life. You have to stand up and take it. So that's what, I guess, surprises me in retrospect, that we have a football team with that mentality to go out there and take it. So, and I think that all started with Pete Carroll. So you know, he's a pretty popular guy around here, and I hate USC with a passion.
You and me both, brother.
Well, Kenneth, now talking about the matchup, how they match up against the Broncos, obviously, this is the offense that the Seahawks are the best defense in the NFL. Broncos are the best offense in the NFL. The one thing that I've thought was most impressive about the Seahawks defense was how they take out the tight end. Because they took out Jimmy Graham versus the Saints, and they took out Vernon Davis against the 49ers. How do they battle the tight end so well that other teams falter against those two guys?
Well, you know, it's a combination of things, but I do believe that for most of the season, I don't know how they finished, but for most of the season, Football Outsiders had them ranked first against tight ends. And yeah, this is a division with, you know, Vernon Davis and Jared Cook. Well, the division, but outside of Vernon Davis, isn't that strong. But we did face Jimmy Graham, you know, Greg Olsen, some of the top tight ends, and we had KJ Wright. You know, Pro Football Focus rated him as the top coverage linebacker for most of the season. He was really, you know, something really good and special in that outside linebacker coverage position. And the way that we run our defense, you know, is sort of having, you know, that pseudo pass rusher linebacker that can do multiple things. And when the playoffs came around, and KJ Wright got hurt against the 49ers the second time around, he sat out for like 4 weeks. Malcolm Smith came in, you know, he just caught the game-winning interception against the Niners, you know, but he wasn't playing until KJ Wright got hurt. And then Malcolm Smith showed that he could do some things too. He's a USC guy that Carroll picked. And then on the other hand, you also got Cam Chancellor out there, who is also a guy that almost was moved to linebacker because he's so big playing strong safety. So you've got a linebacker in your secondary, you've got a linebacker in your linebacker core, and you've got a linebacker on the defensive line in a way. And when you have that many big guys that can move around, it's going to make it harder for the other big guy on offense that's trying to move around and make catches. You know, when he meets something like Cam Chancellor, it's not something that he's used to facing. He's used to facing, you know, a 5'9", you know, 200-pound guy, not a 6'2", 240-pound guy. That's not what he's used to, and that's the sort of thing where we can disrupt those kind of types of players. I don't really know that much about Julius Thomas, to be honest. So he's someone that just came along this year, and I just haven't had, you know, that much time to, you know, scout him in any way. But I'm sure that it's a good matchup for both sides. It's at least one that's going to be interesting.
Well, your team has lost three times this year, the Cardinals, the 49ers, and Colts. So enough about what makes them great. What is their kryptonite?
Well, I don't know what to say too much about the Colts because the Colts were just
a fluky maddening at times,
they're
right?
A maddening team because they beat the 49ers, they beat the Broncos, they beat the Seahawks, but they're kind of a crappy team.
Yeah.
They're not like – they're a pretty average team.
Yeah.
If you look down, up and down, there's not that much to like about the Colts right now. you could like a lot about their future, but right now they're not that good of a team. So I don't know. We should have beaten them, just like, you know, a lot of teams that didn't, I think. But we didn't. I don't know exactly what happened to the Colts. The other two teams, you know, the Cardinals and the 49ers, they both play really, really tough defense. So if you have a team that can play really tough defense, that's something where all of a sudden, okay, now our offense is having a hard time scoring 10 points. Our defense is really good. We can hold you to 14 points, but we can only score 10. So that's sort of one of those things where, you know, we lost the Cardinals, I think, 17-10, and the 49ers, something like that, and 19-17. So those are one of those games where if you can shut down our offense to that level of ineptitude, we're going to have a hard time winning. You know, that's why we rely so much on one good game from Marshawn Lynch, or one good game from Doug Baldwin, or one good game from Golden Tate, or one good game from Russell Wilson. And over the last 2 years, we've been able to get that about 80% of the time. So that's one of those things against the Broncos. We can't just go out there and expect to shut down their offense and win the game. Even if we were good enough to shut down their offense, which is going to be hard in its own right, we also have to go out there, and Marshawn Lynch is going to have to put us on his back. Someone's going to have to do something. So that's what we're going to be looking to exploit, because, you know, the Cardinals have a top secondary. They got Darrell Washington. They got Clive Campbell on the front seven. 49ers have the best linebackers in the NFL. You know, like literally like two or three of the best linebackers, like the top, like three linebackers. So that's one of those things where, you know, against the Broncos, I'm so happy. And I don't ever want to wish injury on anyone, but if I'm going to face the Broncos and I find out they don't have Von Miller, it's a lot better on my end.
So going into the game, if there is a wild card from the Seahawks, somebody that people could be watching who's normally just an average player, who's that player that could be the difference maker, the wild card that all of a sudden has the game of his life and comes out there and makes it a game-changing play for the Seahawks?
Well, I think everybody got to see Jermaine Kearse last week. You know, that probably would have been my first answer. But I don't know. Like, I actually don't know. Like, is Jermaine Kearse like trending? Does anybody realize who Jermaine Kearse is now? Or are they
I think
only
people are
about
getting there. I think people are starting to realize who he is. Slowly.
You know, so Jermaine Kearse, he caught the game-winning touchdown. Amazing. I mean, he's got a great knack for the big catch. We won two games this year in the regular season because of him, and we just won this one in large part due to his catch. But if not him, I would definitely say Luke Wilson, the tight end out of Rice. He was a fifth-round pick, just sort of a freak of nature sort of guy. Pete Carroll has a penchant for the athletic guys that to take in the fifth, sixth, seventh round. And Wilson wasn't a lot of guys. We were expecting a tight end, but nobody really knew much about Wilson. He came out. He caught something like 75% of his targets. You know, he got, you know, 22 targets. I think he got 17 of them. He had over 200 yards. He's a guy that, in, you know, he had two games over 70 yards, I'm pretty sure, but he's one of those guys where I could see him, you know, going out there and having a big game and maybe getting the game-winning touchdown, because he is sort of an athletic freak. That's one of those things where if you have a Percy Harvin out there to distract, you know, or not just distract, but to pull one more guy away, that's one of those things where even if Percy Harvin's not getting the catches, he's making a huge difference.
All right. Well, Kenneth, are you going to be posting your prediction on field goals this week? Or next week, I guess? When's your prediction coming?
I don't really – I'm not like a guy that comes out and sets out a plan to come out with a prediction.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll tell you that I think the Seahawks are going to win.
Sure.
I think that
– You got a score in mind?
You're not going to like it.
That's fine. That's fine. Hey, I'll take it. I'll take it.
I think it's going to be something like, you know, the last time Peyton Manning played in the Super Bowl, he lost to the Saints 31-17.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to go with 31-17.
All right. There it is. Well, Kenneth, thanks for jumping on the podcast. We appreciate it. You do great stuff at Field Goals, so we appreciate you coming on and talking Seahawks with us.
Thank you very much. The road was shorter than it looked, like 10 years and two more. And I held the girl closer than was safe.
Take what you want from me. I'm not afraid of you. Well, JD, now it's my turn for music. You brought The Rock this week.
You know what? And I think I surprised you because it's been a long time since I brought The Rock, and it was good rock.
It was very good. I enjoyed it a lot. So I'm going to try to impress you. I don't know that you're going to love it because you
usually
don't. You know
what? You said that once but when you played Hanson.
And you actually did love it, which is saying something about you. Anyways, I brought some rock this week. Not The Rock like you did, but some rock.
Okay.
I think you'll give it. I think you'll like it. This is Manchester Orchestra. Their new one. It's called Top Notch. Thank you.
You know, it was. This could be the first time in a long time we both brought The Rock at the same time. And I think, you know what? I'm going on a limb here and say we killed it.
Hey, you know, we had Seattle on the airwaves today,
we
so we kind of had to bring good music, right?
We did.
All
right. Well, it's time for our six-pack of questions, and I gave up on putting in my picks.
Yeah, you totally did. You quit on it because you knew you couldn't win, I guess. So I won again this week. The streak continues, so that means you got to start the questions
can
first.
Can I still blame this on the meds?
You can't.
And the fact I had my shoulder fixed, and I had my bicep reattached, Bobby. Reattached.
Oh, my gosh. Are we still playing Cry Me a River for you? Anyways, we got our own music that we play for these questions. We got to start that now.
Bobby, Bill Cosby's coming back to NBC. Going to star in a new show about a multi-generational family. Haven't seen that before. at 76 years old.
Yeah.
So a star from the 80s and 90s. What other star from the 80s or 90s would you like to see come back to television? It can be a similar role.
All right, I will bring somebody back. Can I go? I'm going to reach back 70s and 80s, okay? I'm not touching the 90s.
This person needs to be alive.
This person is alive, Bob Newhart. We're already giving Michael J. Fox a show. We're giving Bill Cosby a show. Let's reach back in the time in the Wayback Machine, which is terrible.
It's not good.
Yeah. No, give Bob Newhart a sitcom. See how he works. I think he would do well in a multi-generational sitcom. Anyways, JD, we've had a rash of games now in the NBA where we have the nickname jerseys. I don't know if you've seen this.
Yes, I have.
Earlier this year, the Nets and the Heat played. Now the Heat and the Celtics just played with the nickname jerseys. We've gotten two games of Jesus Shuttlesworth. We've gotten King James on the jersey. We've gotten the Truth. Paul Pierce playing in games. I want to know if you were playing in a game, what would be the nickname on your jersey?
Well, first of all, I think it's ridiculous. It reminds
good
me
way
of
to sell jerseys.
The XFL.
Yeah.
And He Hate Me, if you remember, Rod
I do.
Smart.
Yep.
It's just stupid. Just stupid. But I have to do it. You've asked me to put a name.
I need you to put a name on your jersey.
I would just put Bionic.
That's not too bad. Just, you are pretty much rebuilt.
Just Bionic.
Every part of you is rebuilt. Nothing's natural anymore.
Bigger, stronger, faster.
They've rebuilt him.
They have rebuilt me. Bobby, it's award show season.
Mm-hmm.
If you had to give one television show all the awards.
Oh.
I know, right?
Congratulations, you get all the awards.
What, I mean, obviously, all the awards. Best show.
Yeah.
What is it?
Best show. So, of everything, every single genre.
Yes.
Throw it all up there.
Yep.
I'd probably say House of Cards.
Really?
Which is a Netflix show.
I didn't even know you watched that.
I love that show. Really? I loved
that's
every single
Don
minute
Cheadle
of that
show, right?
No, that is not. That's House of Lies, I think. Or
there's a house.
That's on Showtime. House of Cards.
Wait, it's how you like to show House
of Cards has Kevin Spacey, Robin Wright. It's a David Fincher show.
Kristen Bell. Nope, that's
no,
the other
come on,
house
that's the,
show.
That's the Lies show. Man. Oh, anyways, I'm going to just brush past your lack of knowledge about TV shows. Golden Globes, there was a Golden Globe for Netflix. Robin Wright won it for Best Actress for her role in House of Cards.
Yeah.
I want to know, does actually winning an award validate Netflix's role as a network now bringing out new shows? Does that give them any credit?
It does, and a good example to look at for that is HBO. HBO just played movies, then they came with Sopranos, and a few other shows, and
6 Feet Under.
Yep, all of
your
a sudden,
favorite.
I love 6 Feet
your
Under.
Your favorite, Sex and the City. That's what I was gonna say.
Yeah, no, but it changed the game for HBO.
Taxi Cab Confessions.
That's not.
That was HBO.
Is that HBO?
Yeah, it's HBO.
Wow, you know this.
Every kid in the 1990s was like, oh, Taxi, I might see a boob. I might see a boob. Turn that on, I might see a boob.
Oh, my goodness.
If you didn't have Cinemax or Showtime in the 90s, you looked to HBO to show you some boob. And Taxi Cab Confessions was the number one show you'd go to if you wanted to see secret boob as a teenage boy.
So I would say yes, it helps winning an award to propel them. And I think Netflix was hoping that Arrested Development would do better.
Mm.
And they still may bring Arrested Development back, but who knows. Right now, Bobby, how jealous are you of my goatee?
Not at all. JD is rocking this atrocious goatee.
How is this atrocious?
Where I've figured out what he looks like. There was a character on the TV show ER. He was a male nurse, and he worked the front desk.
And he was like 6'8".
He was. He's a huge guy, and you're a tall guy. But this guy, I actually pulled up Abraham Ben Ruby. If you want to Google ER... Abraham Ben Ruby, that's what JD looks like right now with his goatee.
Here's the deal.
Spitting image.
I have very little use of my right arm right
Everybody
now.
For the past 2 weeks knows that now.
I can't shave.
You did a good job on either side.
Because I could do this, but then the detail, getting around the nose, I would have cut my nose off. But you know what? I'm rocking it. There's one or two gray hairs in it.
There's more than one or two.
What?
But anyways, you do. You did a good job shaping it.
Okay.
I just want to see you own it more. I don't see you owning it.
How can
You're
I own it?
Celebrating the goatee.
How can I
you
own it?
You need to celebrate it. Give it some more fun, man. Give it something else.
Some handlebars on the side?
Hey, that might be...
I thought about fooing it out.
You could pull that off. You might actually look tough.
I'll see right. what I can do for you.
All right. Now, my last question, JD. Bud Selig is now the winner of the first annual Bud Selig Leadership Award. Did you hear about this? He is the winner of the first annual Bud Selig. He gave himself an award. If there was a JD award, and you were winning the JD Award.
Uh-huh.
What's the JD Award? The first annual. It's going to be a yearly JD Award. What are you giving it out for?
Excellence in awesomeness. Can I do that?
That's kind of what Bud Selig did.
I know. He's
kind of gave himself. I mean, who's the best leader in baseball? Me. That's how we went with that one.
Maybe height? I don't know. That's you know what? I'm just trying to shape the minds of the youth out there. That's all I'm trying to do. You know, just lending a hand, you know, making sure that next generation grows up to be wonderful people. That's all I want.
Like Abraham Ben-Ruby from ER? Is that what you're trying to shape them into?
I want the children of the world to hold hands, sing songs together of unity and peace. That's all I need. That's the JD Award.
Was that your acceptance speech as well as the award? Wow. Wow. All right.
Well, that brings us close to the station. When we come back, last call, one stop away.
Closing time. Open all the doors and let you out into the world.
Bobby, mine is from San Francisco.
All right.
You love Jelly Bellies, right?
Jelly Bellies, like the jelly bean?
Yeah.
Yeah, they're delicious.
They are. Some, except when you get that buttered popcorn mixed in.
There's nothing wrong with the buttered popcorn one.
But when you mix the buttered popcorn with other stuff...
But that's what you don't do with Jelly Bellies. You don't do a handful of Jelly Bellies.
Right.
You pick and choose.
Right. Well, they've got some new flavors. They have a chocolate-covered Tabasco-flavored jelly bean now.
All right.
Which makes me almost want to vomit.
They have a vomit one. I know in the Harry Potter ones.
Oh, what were those called?
Birdies, spots, beetles, beans? Something.
Well, they also have a new flavor. Draft beer flavor jelly.
Hey.
It doesn't contain any alcohol. They want that known first and foremost.
Okay.
But it's the taste of a German Hefeweizen ale. And they said it actually does taste like beer. But my question for you, Bobby, do we need a beer-flavored jelly bean that has no alcohol in it?
You know what? If you're going to work on your kids getting them ready for college, and
so
they
you
say
give, you
beer
want,
is an acquired taste,
okay,
you give, you feed them
children.
Those jelly beans to get them ready for college.
Wow.
No,
if you're getting them ready for college, you buy like bags of them,
well,
and you're like,
Is there ever any Jelly Belly that anybody needs? Do we need a Dr. Pepper-flavored Jelly Belly? Why don't we just go buy a Dr. Pepper? It's kitsch. It's unique.
It is.
It's kind of cool.
I would rather have that than the chocolate-covered Tabasco-flavored one.
Oh, yeah. But if you know, if you saw a bag of these in the store, you'd probably pick them up just to try them. Which has got to be the market that they're going for.
You know what? We need one of our listeners to find these draft beer and send them to us. And we'll
eat them on the show.
Absolutely.
They'll replace a beer for a segment.
Message us on Twitter. We'll tell you where to send them.
Absolutely. We always love free stuff from our listeners. All right. Quick acting Houston firefighter here, JD. There was a truck on State Highway 71 from Austin, Texas.
71.
Yep. He saw smoke funneling out of the truck's brakes, so he and his wife pulled over, and he ran up to try to help. The rear brakes had locked up, and they were on fire.
Okay.
The extinguisher that the truck driver had on board did not work.
Oh.
He asked Captain Craig Moreau asked the driver what do you have in this truck? He said, beer. It's all beer.
Ooh.
So he got the...
You gotta save that.
Yep. So the driver tossed him the keys. They opened up the truck, grabbed some tall boys, shook them up, popped the tops, and sprayed it and put the fire out using beer.
Really?
Yeah. He shook up all these beers and used them to put out a fire. You know, all this time we've been using beer just to have a good night. It can save some lives.
Save some lives. It can. You know, you think of the foam coming out of a fire extinguisher. this will smell much better.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
And the damage is not going to be that bad when you see it if you think, well, all that is beer. Let's just drink all that stuff.
Yeah, the number of times I've been at a Buffalo Wild Wings and I get the habanero fire wings, and then what puts out that fire?
There you go, beer.
Beer.
Puts it out.
Well, a great show, and a big thank you to Kenneth for coming and talking Seahawks with us.
Absolutely. Getting us another step closer to the Super Bowl. Very exciting. Episode 2 of Season 4 is in the books, JD. We'll do better next week. I might see a boob. Turn that on, I might see a boob.
Oh, my goodness.